40 million drivers can't transition to electric vehicles without an affordable and convenient EV charging infrastructure. Our guest is the co-founder of a clean tech startup that figured out how to bring EV charging to the millions of drivers who park their cars on city streets by using energy from buildings to power a publicly accessible curbside charger. And it's a collaborative economic model and one that allows for EV chargers to be deployed within cities at speed and scale. Needless to say, I'm a little excited for this conversation. I'm having a hard time getting my words out. That's how excited I am to learn about this wonderful clean tech company. Get ready, folks, for the Startup Life live show. Let's glow, everyone. Hello and welcome to the Startup Life live show. I'm your host, Andy Lyons, four times founder and startup champion to founders around the world. And after raising four businesses of my own, that's right, I got a pretty clear idea of what you're navigating through every single day. Those moments of, oh my gosh, where you're pulling your hair out in the next moment, where you're patting yourself on the back and popping the champagne because come on, you're amazing, right? And the journey is the startup life journey is the best, in my opinion. In fact, you never lose when you launch a business. You always win. You know that. You're tapping into sides of yourself you never would have found out if you hadn't launched a business. So I'm grateful that you carved out time to tune into the Startup Life live show and up your founder game. Because, you know, there's no training for this, right? You have to continually figure out, okay, what am I supposed to be doing now? I'm no longer an employee. I am an owner. I'm a boss of me. You've got to keep showing up for yourself. And part of that is upping your founder game, because as you do better, that's right, your startup's going to do better. Hearty welcome, everyone. Woohoo! Hi, live viewers and mwah, mwah, mwahs to the replay viewers and podcast listeners. I'm so grateful that you're here tuning in. And wherever you are watching the video, please give the video a like button so that we can reach more founders out in the world. And if you're tuning in from YouTube, please click that subscribe button and tap on that thumbs up button. Really helps us, again, reach more founders. And how do you know whenever I post a new show? I'm live most Tuesdays and Fridays at 12 p.m. ET. You join the Startup Life Live meetup group. That way you'll get a deep dive into each founder who's joining me or investor. And I only interview diverse founders and diverse investors. So there's lots of not only representation here, but ways for you to learn about how other founders are figuring things out along the way. I want to do a quick shout out for this great platform run by our beloved Bobby Carlton here in Boston. We love her something fierce. And it's called Innovation Women. It's boost your visibility and get your voice heard. Innovation Women, not your average speakers bureau. Please go check it out. It's over here. You can also get a good deal if you go to bit.ly/AndyInnoWomen. Because folks, you know, Bobby is all about getting rid of, that's right, mantles. Now, you know that, especially in the tech industry. Every time you go somewhere, what's with all the men up there? All right. And it's, a lot of times it's, with all due respect to you wonderful white guys, it's a lot of white guys up there. We got to get more women up there. And you're a founder. You have something to say for your industry and as part of stepping into your authority as a founder, right? Getting out there. So it's really inexpensive to join Innovation Women. So hop on over there and make it happen for yourself. And speaking of women, are you doing any B2B work? Because if so, you're going to want to get certified as a woman-owned business with WeBank. They're the gold standard. And whether your business is manufacturing, construction, electronics, robotics, AI, or goods and services, there are growth revenue and opportunities you're missing by not becoming certified as a woman-owned business. It's a terrific way to promote your company to major corporations and government contracts that are actively seeking to conduct business with a woman-owned enterprise. So the best certifying organization, that's right, WeBank, and I help folks. So just shoot me an email, andy@andylyons.com. And whether you have just launched and there is no revenue, or you're at the millions level, okay, in revenue, I can help you through that pesky application. Seriously, I've helped dozens and dozens of women get across the finish line, and it's truly an honor. Okay, time to get going here and introduce you to our wonderful guests that we're having on the show today. That's right, Tia Gordon's in the house, and she is going to be sharing so much great information. She's the co-founder and COO of It's Electric, a clean tech startup bringing EV charging to the millions of drivers who cannot charge at home as they park their cars on city streets. It's a collaborative economic model and one that allows for EV chargers to be deployed within cities at speed and at scale. And Tia, oh my gosh, she has this amazing background. She spent over 20 years in design, leadership, and operations across a range of disciplines for some of the country's top firms and institutions, and her work has received the industry's top accolades, including the National Design Award from the Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum. Oh yeah, let's bring her to the house. Welcome to the show, Tia Gordon! The crowd is smiling, all clapping. Can we hear you?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can. Yay! It's Tia Gordon's in the house, everyone. Tell everybody where you're hanging out, because that background is so fascinating, right?
I'm coming at you live today from the new lab in the Brooklyn Navy Yard here in Brooklyn, New York. So this is a nice old shipping factory that's now a tech incubator. So anyone who's in Brooklyn, anywhere, a great place to work out of, check out the new lab by all means.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. We love seeing the background and knowing where our guests are hanging out from. Folks, be sure to let us know where you're tuning in from. All right, I know there are folks tuning in from around the world. Say a quick hello on whatever social platform you're using today. So Tia, I first like to find out a little bit about my guests. Like, what were you doing before you became a founder? And you started with like the most amazing school, Parsons School of Design, and you know, your 20 years of design and leadership and operations. Let's talk a little bit about how that led you to the clean tech industry.
That is a very good question. So I did not set out to be a founder. I have been working in New York City. I'm a New Yorker, so shout out to all New Yorkers that are listening to this show today. I have been in the city for 20 years. I built my career here, as you know, from having attended Parsons. And you know, for me, I had been working in design, specifically public-facing design, which means that any kind of software or hardware interface that you would encounter in a public space, we kind of take this for granted these days. We all have an iPhone in our pocket. We all understand how touchscreens work. But you know, dating myself here, I was working with teams to figure out how to build 40-foot long touch walls before iPhones and iPads existed. So bringing together the technology, bringing together the design, and working together not only to build this technology, but to build stakeholder engagement from some of the top countries' top institutions to say, hey, we have this new technology and you should explore this for your institution. So having that background is really what gave me the grounding that I feel I needed to explore the world of climate tech. And it wasn't like I was just going to say, okay, I'm going to take everything I know, I'm going to then just map it over to climate tech. It really came from literally me looking around and seeing this problem around cities not being able to adopt electric vehicles,
right,
and trying to understand why that was. And the number one issue that I saw was the fact that there was no design thinking that was being used in the current design mechanism for EV charging in cities. You know, it's a huge factor, especially in a city like New York, the design capital of the world. You know, we deserve a world-class solution. And
right,
that's what we set out to do.
Oh my gosh. First of all, I think about your beautiful brain, because when you have that design element built into your brain, like you do, you mm-hmm. see everything for its form, its feature, its user experience. You know, it must be, of course, be a burden as well as you walk around the streets or you see designs out there. But at the same time, it allows you to say, okay, well, we want to have an experience for folks, and we'll have photos coming up of the chargers, so don't worry, everybody. But what a great way to use your brilliance. And yeah, you know, I was thinking as you were growing and building your own understanding of design and how it works and all the elements and scaling for other companies, how you chose the EV industry, because there's so much climate tech out there. It's crazy that could use really good design and product design. How did you end up with electric vehicles as a North Star for you?
Honestly, I'm going to give you the scoop here. And there wasn't a master plan where I said, I am going to go into electric vehicles and this is going to be my life's work. It was really looking around and trying to identify a solution to a problem, coming up with that solution, sort of doing early testing, kind of putting the word out, talking to a lot of groups in climate tech, talking to accelerators, talking to incubators. And when we kind of got this incredibly positive response early on, just to kind of level set, you know, we're an early stage company, we're a pre-seed stage company. So we needed to have validation. And we've received that validation over the last 14 months. And that gave us the confidence that we needed to really feel like this is a solution and this is what we're going to do moving forward. So even though I have other issues that irk me on a daily basis, and maybe those are the next problems that I go out and solve, mainly, you know, basically recycling. I'd love to find some better solutions for cities to be able to better recycle and handle their waste material. For me, the gods had it aligned and the universe had it aligned that not necessarily adding more vehicles in cities. That's not my ambition. My ambition is to decarbonize the transportation that we already have in cities. And that's how It's Electric was founded.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Okay, so had you been exposed because to entrepreneurship, because you said it was never my intention, and I can give you a high five on that for sure. Did you have role models growing up, or was it just this specific problem you said, okay, no one else is doing it, I'm gonna do it?
Good question. I love to talk about, and this is a fun moment, I love to talk about my biggest role model growing up. I grew up again in New York, so I was raised on, you know, WNET and Channel 13 and public television, Sesame Street. So when I was a kid, a baby, I watched a ton of Sesame Street. So Muppets and Jim Henson and Children's Television Workshop and all of that is near and dear to my heart. And I think a large part of that that really sort of bonded itself early into my psyche was this idea of people and Muppets, of course, all hanging out together on stoops, sort of this big community coming together and really kind of working out problems and having relationships and being in this very dense, tight-knit community. And that really resonated with me as a kid. And so even though I grew up in the suburbs, I immediately wanted to move somewhere and have a stoop. That was sort of like my high level goal, was that I want to stoop when I grow up because that's where all the action happens. And guess where there's a lot of stoops? In Brooklyn. So now I'm a proud Brooklyn resident and I have a stoop and I love stoop culture and I love all of the community that comes from it. And really that's also, you know, part of It's Electric's DNA is the fact that we're not only design centered, but we're community centered. You know, how do we help bring the benefits of the green economy into neighborhoods that otherwise are being left out of a lot of this energy transition, a lot of this green transition, a lot of this Green New Deal opportunity that's, you know, benefiting people on higher levels, but how do we bring that into the pockets of everyday people and schools and libraries? And that's also something that really resonated with me as a chance to kind of tap into my roots of Sesame Street and stoop culture and find a way to have the neighborhoods of that I love so much here in Brooklyn benefit.
Oh my gosh, folks, I am having such an Andy-licious moment. I didn't know there was such a thing as stoop culture. I love that. And yes, growing up and seeing and in movies, everybody hanging out on the stoops and having conversations, having lived in, you know, a stoop life myself for many years here in Boston. Even my cat would hang out on the stoop and do high fives to everybody walking by. It was wonderful. And I love that something fierce. I want to say a quick hello. Hey, Mia Voss. Yes. She's a former New Yorker tuning in from Florida on her way back to Denver. So happy to see you. And she says she totally gets the stoop aspiration. I love that, Mia. And listeners, you know that when Mia swings by, we have to do a shout out podcast. Yeah, you would love her podcast. It's called You Don't Talk About
Us. That looks great.
She has all the right conversations in a way that, you know, conversations that are difficult, that we're like, we don't want to talk about that. Mia not only talks about it, but she just does discovery on the topics and uncovers really good information that we all need so we can have more conversations. So thank you, Mia, for swinging by. Always happy to see you. Okay, so how did you, you have a co-founder, Nathan. How did you connect with Nathan? How did you come together? Because many of you founders know that co-founder relationship, what? That can be a gift or it can be a disaster. How did this happen for you?
So Nathan and I met in undergrad at Parsons, you know, 20 something years ago. And just to kind of date myself there, I'm putting that time marker on the line because we knew each other because we were the ones who were latest in the computer lab every night. This is before every college student had a laptop. This is where you actually had to go to a lab to use.
And what year was that?
We graduated in 2000.
Oh, that's great.
From Parsons. Yeah. So yeah. 1996 to 2000.
In the middle of the .com.
Definitely also shout out to Parsons School of Design by every stretch of the imagination. Fantastic school. Loved every moment I had there. What was great about Parsons, and one of the reasons I wanted to attend Parsons, is that, you know, they basically built a design curriculum that was built around the real world. Everything was based on real designers working in the field, working in New York, coming in and teaching in the classroom. So to have that direct correlation and that direct transition from real world design work to the classroom, I think is what made me as strong of a worker as I am today. I'm not sort of designing from a perspective that doesn't have a viable sort of common line for actually being having employable skills. And I think that, you know, that's why Parsons resonates and is one of still the top design schools in the country. So that's where I met Nathan. We were always the ones that were working latest and hardest. And, you know, that is the foundation on which, you know, everything that we've done in our career separately. He went towards architecture. I went into design and digital and tech. And then obviously those two areas, his background in architecture and engineering, my background in design and tech, then kind of created all the pieces that then fit It's Electric together, because we are a design-centered approach to EV charging. But, you know, his background is 20 years of, you know, digging holes in the ground and putting right. things in it. If those things are hospitals, if those things are laboratories, if those things are EV chargers, that all fits in the same bucket.
Well, and the brilliance that Nathan brings is that because he's worked on these type of structures, he's had to go get the permits. He's had to talk to the utilities. He's had to talk to all the different entities that have to sign off when exactly. you're building. So when we get into how, you know, It's Electric works, that is a key. Oh my gosh, I love the two of you coming together. I love this origin story for you co-founders. That's amazing. And is he local too for you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he's a lifelong New Yorker as well. He was born and raised upstate. I was born and raised downstate. And then we both live in Brooklyn.
But that means you really understand the challenge of EVs in cities when people are parking on the streets. Of course, we see chargers in the parking lots, but that's different. Not everybody's going to be able to afford the parking lot. So let's get into now how this all works. And this is when I get to show all the fun pictures, folks, because we want to talk about how you took this idea from ideation to creating the MVP, the design element, the obstacles you had to overcome, and the failures and missteps, because really, whatever you're going to share, Tia, it's going to help a founder watching today or 5 years from today. So this is very exciting. So folks, let me just give you an example of how this works. Here's a charger up close right there. You can see it on the sidewalk. Here's another example. You know, again, stoop culture right there. And over here, more of a, you know, another Brooklyn type neighborhood. You can see the charger there. It's right outside people's homes. And now I'm going to show you how it connects from the building to the charger itself. So you have that. And podcast listeners, I'm so sorry, but you're just going to have to go maybe check out the video on this for the visuals, or go visit It's electric.us to learn more. Okay, Tia, talk about how you guys first came up with the MVP so that you can put it out to the world and get an idea of how this would work.
Exactly. So, you know, we love New York. We love every single group in New York that's working to hit sustainability goals, including the New York City Department of Transportation. They are far ahead dozens of other cities across the U.S. in terms of having that EV vision charging plan for the city, and we commend them. So they have the goal of having 10,000 public curbside chargers by 2030.
Oh my God, that's like around the corner.
It is around the corner. And don't forget our UN, not the New York's goal, but the UN goal for capping greenhouse gas emissions is 2025. And so in case, you know, we haven't checked, we're almost halfway through 2023.
Yeah.
So, you know, for us, you know, how do we help groups like New York City DOT, we're not working with them at this point, but we aspire to, you know, reach that goal for 2030. And for us, it became a question of what do I do to identify the biggest obstacles that they're facing in hitting that number. So right. We worked backwards. We did some reverse engineering, and we said, okay, so for all of the 100 chargers that are currently deployed in a city like New York, they all require a connection to the utility main in the street. So in New York City, that's Con Ed is our utility. In other cities, there's, you know, all the different utilities depending on right. what city that you're in. And so right now in a city like New York, if you wanted to install an electric vehicle charger, what you have to do is you basically have to do a street closer. You have to trench about 7 feet down, get a permit to connect to the utility, put in a transformer to down convert the power, put in a submeter, close that gap up, and then put your hardware on top of that. And right now, okay, all so the...
That's sorry, a chokehold.
Yes.
On scaling and speed.
Yes, it's not synonymous with speed, right? No. We know in any city that's not synonymous with speed. So, you know, that, and then once you close up that infrastructure and you have that in place subgrade, you have to put your hardware on top. And in the United States right now, all EV charging hardware at best is about 6 feet tall, at worst is 13 feet tall, and it's all between 1 and 3 feet wide. It all looks like a gas pump.
Yeah.
Right? And so literally one of the first things I said to my co-founder, I said, pardon me for this very blatant expression. I said, why is this so big and so bad? Like, it doesn't need to be like this. I mean, I'm just going to just do a demo here. Like, you know, like plugging in your electric vehicle is synonymous to plugging in your phone more than it is synonymous to putting noxious fuels into a container into a fuel containment system.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons why the older school EV charging companies, whom were grateful for that work that they did in getting EV chargers out there, even to begin with, worked with this idea of you know, basically it's called skeuomorphism, right? It's a design term. And it means, you know, basically, why do the folders on your desktop look like a folder? They don't have to look like a folder.
No, it could have been a smoking cigarette.
It could have been a smoking cigarette. Exactly.
We
don't condone smoking, but it could have been a smoking cigarette. But the reason that it looks like a folder is because you know that you put things in a folder, and then your
That's
folders
right.
go inside folders, and then you have this vertical storage.
It helped those of us before mm-hmm. before computers understand, oh, a file folder. Okay. So yeah. So, and that term again is
skeuomorphism.
Skeuomorphism.
Yes, that's your SAT word, everybody, for today. And so for me, you know, that's why most EV chargers look like gas pumps, because people need to kind of have that same visceral feeling of I'm taking this hose off of the pump and I'm putting it into my vehicle. But it doesn't actually have to work like that. So for me, it was really a question of breaking this down. And so again, we are a design-centered approach. We are a community-centered approach. Our chargers do not require a connection to the utility. Instead, what we do is if you pull up the diagram drawing, the schematic, exactly. So we pull our power from adjacent buildings. We pull spare capacity in any building, regardless of typology. So think about it this way. A level two charger, which is what our chargers are 240 volt. That's the same power pull as if any of these buildings put an electric dryer in their basement. But instead of it being a dryer that's running 12 hours a day, we are an EV charger. So we just run that power to the curb, make that a public charger. Why would a building let us do this? Because we're going to revenue share back to them. If that single charger in front of this building that's featured is only used 20% of the time, we're offsetting about 80% of their annual electric bill.
That's huge.
That's huge. Electric, I mean, that is a huge bill for most Americans right now. And if we're able to offset that while bringing clean energy and clean air into their neighborhoods, we are a win for that building. We are a win for that neighborhood. And we are a win for that city.
Wow. So did you build your relationship with the DOT and Con Ed first to let them know what you were thinking and find out what would work and not work for them before you started designing or at the same time? Because, you know, these relationships, folks, with utilities, you know, first of all, they're very big and they can also be very cumbersome in their communication and take lots of time and legal people coming in and all of that. How did all of it happen?
We absolutely reached out to DOTs. We reached out to utilities, not just in New York. We're not just a New York City-based company. We're talking to cities across the country right now who are interested in finding the fastest ways to get clean transportation onto their streets. So we reached out and we said, this is our idea. This is what we want to be doing. You know, we're building this. We're early. But we want to be transparent with you. We want to, you know, please let us know if you see issues with this. You know, we were worried, you know, that Con Ed may have an issue with us. We were worried that DOT might have an issue with us.
Sure.
And, you know, we want to be a partner to these groups in every city across the country. We are here. Our number one objective is basically helping the country move to a clean energy transition. So, you know, we're all in this together, and it's going to take a public-private partnership in a lot of the days and a lot of the times to reach these goals that are often very lofty, that are being set from, you know, high level government structures.
And so it could be someone who owns that brownstone, or it could be a building that is owned. It could be a high rise. I mean, how does that, is it, are you mostly working with just 4-story structures, or can you much bigger?
I mean, think about it this way. Shout out to anyone who's working across the country in a school district. We're very interested in partnering with school districts. We feel like those parking spots that are dedicated for teachers, for buses, for administrators during the week from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. is fantastic. Why can't we convert those spots into EV charging spots in the afternoons on weekends to not only bring revenue into those school districts, but to bring clean air into those neighborhoods? So we're really excited about partnering with buildings, regardless of typology. We show that brownstone image because that sort of resonates with people and helps them wrap their head around it the fastest. But we are agnostic. We can partner with any type of building. We like to say anywhere that there's a building and a curb, we can install a charger in a matter of days.
Oh, my God. That was going to be my next question. So, I was going to lead into, how did you figure out all the parts and pieces, Tia? Because this, again, is hard assets. And hard assets are, well, how are we going to get the supply chain to work favorably and still, you know, support our mission and purpose, which is clean tech, right? And sustainability. And then, you know, how long does it take to get these pieces manufactured and put together?
Exactly. So, you know, following Biden administration, Buy America, Build America, this is the top provision coming out of the IRA, right? So we needed to make sure that what we were building could be manufactured here in the United States. So the first thing we did was to find a fabricator that also had electrical engineering. Then we found that right here in the Northeast United States in Connecticut. We're working with a fantastic group up there. The second thing we did was building relationships with an industrial design partner. I'm a designer. My co-founder is a designer. But I don't need to design it by myself. Let me find a group that has already deployed. In this case, we found a group called Billings Jackson Design. We went to them because they already have 4,000 pieces of electrified street furniture deployed in New York City, and they have other pieces deployed internationally. They know how to design so that they get through city approvals. They know how to design so that things can actually be deployed in the public right of way. You know, these are the sort of barriers that can easily trip you up and that can slow your entire process down. So they were very fun to work with. And even with me, they were very patient when I'm like, oh, can we try one more design tweak and make it a little bit like this or like that? And they're like, Tia, do you want this on the street or not? And so, you know, you have to work with your partners and you have to find partners that know what they're doing. Again, like, we're not out here designing the world's most bespoke EV charger. We're designing something that can be deployed with speed. We want to be able to get these chargers out there as quickly as possible so that we can help all of these mandates that are happening. We have, 12 states now following California's EV mandate that no new internal combustion engines are produced after 2035. So how do we make sure that this funnel that we're all in, whether or not we know it, for anyone that drives a vehicle, you're going electric. And if you're in a city, you need a place to charge.
Wow. And do they need this, especially in Southern California, where the electricity bill is so high, folks? I mean, hundreds and hundreds a month for electricity and water, actually, too. But it's very, very expensive. And I'm sure in other parts of the country it is as well. And yeah, we had a woman out of Germany who had solar panels for the deck outside your home. in apartments. And same thing, offsetting with the utilities, offsetting that person's electricity bill. It's so wonderful. And imagine how a homeowner feels. Maybe they're walking everywhere they're going, but they don't have, but they have this opportunity to help somebody out and lower the cost of their electricity while making their community, their stoop culture more cleaner and more sustainable. I just love this, something fierce. And of course, California, as you know, Southern California, they drive everywhere.
And shout out, same as I shout out to school districts earlier, shout out to all of the potential real estate partners out there. If you are a real estate company that has a portfolio of properties, reach out to us. We feel that the Zillow of the future, the same way now that when you're looking for an apartment on Zillow, you're like, oh, this one has central air. Let's find an apartment that has a curbside EV charger in a city, because that is an amenity that landlords are going to want to offer their tenants.
Oh my gosh, of course. Oh my gosh, I love that. And Richard, I just got to backtrack a little. Yes, skeuomorphism for the Scrabble crowd. I love it. I love it. All right. So now, you know, you pulled it together. You worked with your industrial design person who said, yeah, that's nice, that design, but we got to fix, you know, it's got to work and meld in with the landscape it's going to and be easy to duplicate and manufacture. So you figured out manufacturing, you got your partners in place, and now you're ready to start implementing. What did you find out when you started having to prove your value prop? Which is that landlords want this, EV drivers want this, the city wants this. I mean, there's a lot of touch points of who has to want this to prove your value prop. What was that like to you?
It's still in progress. You know, so right now, if you go to our website, it's electric.us, you go to get involved. We have a sign up, whether or not you're a municipality, if you're a building owner, if you're an EV driver or aspiring EV driver, if you go to itselectric.us, there's a sign up form. Please sign up for this. This will help us heat map in different cities where our pilots will be. And, you know, honestly, it's been great. We just had a great win at South by Southwest. We are Innovation Award winners for urban infrastructure. And that's incredibly validating for us. You know, we find our solution to be the next up.
I've got the clappers out, everybody. And I got the maracas. Congratulations.
And thank you. And, you know, so that's where we're at in terms of validation. Validation is not something that happens overnight. Validation is a combination of, I would say, preparation and trust, right? So we have been preparing for this since our inception about 14 months ago. We're starting to deploy our pilots in cities. We'll be having a big announcement around that in the next few weeks. And we'll be looking for other partners in other cities to then start to scale our ability to expand across the U.S. So if you work for a municipality, if you're trying to find an EV charging station, I should not forget to mention that It's Electric is free to cities and we are free to building owners. That is our main value proposition. Our goal is to decarb transportation in your city, and there shouldn't be a barrier regardless of wealth. So please reach out to us and say, I want It's Electric for my city, and we'd love to talk to you, especially obviously with the CIF funding having just opened up.
Yep.
There's federal level funding that can flow down to you today. You need to just kind of identify your project barriers, your project parameters, and we would love to be a partner with you.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I just have to take a quick second here and let everybody know who's tuning in, whenever you tune in. Tia is an ideal media prepared guest. You see how she constantly and consistently keeps bringing the topic back to itselectric.us, all the different ways, shouting out, bringing folks in. She doesn't know who's going to be tuning into this, but she is prepared. Okay. And I just say that for all you founders who get interviewed, no matter where you are, whether it's a podcast or someone sticks a mic in your face and you're at a conference, be prepared to constantly bring the topic back to your business, your value prop, your calls to action. Have them ready on the tip of the tongue. Tia, so I'm going to be sharing this example everywhere. And yeah, Richard, yes, I really like decarb transportation for stitch that on a pillow, but I also really like validation is preparation plus trust. So I'm doing the quick stitch that on a pillow moment right here, everyone. I ran a pitch event here in Boston monthly for 3 years. Plus mentor all with all the big accelerators. Never have I heard it put so brilliantly yet. Validation is preparation plus trust.
Thanks. It spawns from one of my favorite expressions, which is from Robert Evans, who's sort of the sort of iconic producer of many films. But he says that luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
And that's 100%.
That's always stuck with me for years.
Absolutely. Because you don't know when it's going to hit, folks. And sometimes it takes a really long time. So how have, well, you've just explained how what customer acquisition looks like. And you also just illustrated your calls to action for customers to onboard, reminding folks in municipalities, et cetera, it's free to you, how to use this, et cetera. How have you funded the It's Electric? Because that's not an easy thing when you have parts and pieces and inventory flow and you've got to pull all these things together and licenses, et cetera. Yeah. How has that worked?
Well, you know, my background is building crazy things in New York City. So I know how to put projects together. I know how to run schedules. I know how to run budgets. I know how to deliver things on time and on schedule and on budget. I guess time and schedule are the same things, but here we go. But for me, the big difference between running any one of the projects, the many projects that I've run before starting It's Electric and It's Electric, is that we had to raise funds from venture capital for this. I'm a first-time founder. I'm a female founder. I work in climate and hard tech. And as we all know, that of the billions of dollars that were deployed through venture capital, only 1.9% went to mixed gender founding teams. So stitch that on a effing pillow.
Well, I usually have a boo for that.
Exactly. And so that was a huge learning curve for me. But I'm proud to say that through that learning experience, I found amazing supporters who not only believe in the mission of It's Electric, but that believe in the founders and that are putting their money where their mouth is and supporting female-founded companies. So we have amazing support from amazing groups such as Brooklyn Bridge Ventures, The Helm, X Factor, Graham & Walker, Clean Energy Ventures Group. So many amazing investors came behind us, got behind us. Not that we didn't have to have lots of conversations to get there.
That's right.
But we did. Generator
X-Factor
as well.
X Factor here in Boston, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so many amazing teams. And that was honestly, you know, for me, I've built so many things in my career, but nothing has been more satisfying than this group of investors and advisors that we've pulled together who now have built this little It's Electric community. And we're going up to do very big things, but it all started from the belief of all of these people coming from different places. So one of our earliest advisors, one of our key advisors, is Mia Burke, who's the co-founder of Citibike. So she's a personal hero of mine in terms of, you know, who would ever thunk that New York City would give up so much street side curbage to bike share? It's unfathomable if you grew up in New York City to know that we would have this network. And I believe
we've heard Fran Lebowitz go on forever about it.
Oh, really? That's amazing. I have to listen
to that.
Yeah,
she's really funny.
I mean, and so, you know, she was literally the second person we called because she's a personal hero of It's Electric. And we said, you know, how did you do this? How did you convince a city like New York to put this on the street? I mean, literally, this is, you know, coming from someone who's biked in New York City for 20 years. I've not had very positive biking experiences until, you know, basically we had the Bloomberg administration and Jeanette Exotic-Khan and all of the work that they did to basically make biking infrastructure in a city like New York when it was previously unfathomable.
Yes, so risk-taking if you wanted to have a real life-altering moment.
Exactly. So, you know, that's sort of, you know,
so
for
can
me,
we just do a shout out
everyone together? Yeah.
Thank you for helping. It's Electric. Oh my gosh, this is amazing that you got, and this is big, folks. Okay, another, you know, moment for you all to take in, which is that Tia and Nathan went towards somebody really big. Okay, they could have said, well, I mean, she's a hero of mine, a shero, but I, you know, why would she come talk to me, right? Instead, you just kept that, you owned it. And you went with your authority to say, Mia, we could use your help. Look, she's looking for inspiration now, too. She's done her thing with Citibike. She's looking to help other companies grow. Shoot for the stars with advisors is where I'm getting here.
Absolutely. Yeah. The worst thing you could do is not get an answer back. So there's no reason why you shouldn't reach out. And also shouting, you know, our advisory team, you can see it on our website. If you go to our website, it's following up your CTA, go to itselectric.us, and you can see our incredible advisors. They come from all across the spectrum, and everyone there is helping us from very specific angles. And we wouldn't be where we are today without this group.
That is wonderful. And I love that you found the investors who are pro female, pro diverse founders. Not always easy. You have to, you know, maybe sometimes folks, you have to kiss a few frogs out there, do your research, find out, build those relationships, use any kind of social capital you can find, or find somebody who has the social capital to support you and be an advisor. But I know it's not easy. So let's talk about when you did pitch, because we know with female co-founders, have a male co-founder, the male's like, what are you going to do when you win? Oh my gosh. And with the female, they're like, what are you going to do when you know what hits the fan? It's two different styles. What was your experience and what did you learn that you could share with other female co-founders as well as founders in fundraising?
I mean, I'm still learning. I don't think I necessarily have a big takeaway for other female founders other than that you have to be resilient in ways that you perhaps thought you were, but never really actually fully pushed the limit in terms of your resiliency. The way that I forgot who said it best. They said, think about it this way, you know, given the ratio of funding, you know, female founders are getting rejections on par 50 times higher than white male counterparts. And so you have to understand that that is daunting to hear no that many more times.
Right.
And, you know, there's a reason why, you know, and also, you know, I want to give a quick shout out to my also sort of untraditional background. I'm also not coming from an Ivy school. Some VCs say the quiet part loud. You know, when I'm doing intake forms for pitch opportunities, they ask how many members of the founding team come from an Ivy school. And the answer for It's Electric is zero. And we own that.
Can we just take a pause here? Mm-hmm. Enough with that. Just enough. Who came from an Ivy League school? Who cares? This whole...
You're leaving an entire sector of thinking and of ability off the table when you're biasing based on basically a meritocracy. So for us, you know, as much as, you know, there's incredible brilliance that comes out of Ivy schools, and I don't discount them in any way, shape, or form. There's also brilliance that comes from other types of institutional education, and that shouldn't be overlooked. For us, we're super excited to be able to wave the flag for founders that are coming from unconventional quote unquote backgrounds. We're coming from a mixed gender founder team. And so for me, for pitching, it was really understanding very early on, you know, in 30 seconds when you're talking to someone, if there's interest or not. You really kind of get that sense of things very quickly in your conversations. Really understand what it is that's resonating with people, understanding when you're not resonating them. And then, you know, like I've never been in sales, but, you know, from what I understand, it's a very similar cycle in terms of understanding what's a live lead and what's not a live lead, and follow those people that really resonate with you, that really connect with you, that really see what you're doing. Don't chase anything that feels like it's a dead opportunity. Your time is valuable. It's your most limited commodity. Yeah. And so use that time wisely and really try and find the people that are there for you, that are going to be your supporters, that are going to be your cheerleaders.
And folks, reach out to me. We had Alex Iskold on the show a few weeks ago, and he has the best list of questions for investors. Founders, you're the one who's screening the investors at the end of the day. They're not screening you. I'm sorry. They have to deploy their capital. And so, yes, you need to be, you know, talking to as many people as possible, but it's because you have to find the right fit for you, as Tia and Nathan did for It's Electric. They have to be aligned with your mission. You want investors who are cheering wildly for you and believe you can get it done and want to help you get it done. And so these questions that I have for investors, the list, shoot me an email, or I can send you the link, or go visit the show notes when I interviewed Alex, because there are questions like, yeah, how many checks do you write a year? What's your typical check size? Yeah, right down to when you invest, what happens? Okay, it's just so important to get those questions out of the way. Right, Tia?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's completely true. And, you know, real investor conversations will be two way. And yeah. you quickly understand that, and you quickly learn that. But it's honestly the only way to get out there and to understand it is by doing. And I strongly recommend also, you know, for anyone who's working in climate tech, I'm going to give a shout out to our first accelerator that accepted us when we were literally just two sentences on a piece of paper, a generator. So they run an incredible accelerator for climate.
It's called Generator?
G-E-N numeric 8 T-O-R, Generator.
Excellent. I'll have that in the show notes, everybody.
So, you know, we applied to them literally when we were about a month old, and this was one of our earliest validations. We were one of the first groups brought into their first climate tech cohort. I'd like to say they took us under their warm, fuzzy wing, and they really nurtured us as two very, very experienced professionals, but that also were two individuals that had never started a startup before. And they showed us the path. And so for people that are also coming into founder life and not having the sense of where do I start? What do I start with? What are my brass tacks here? There's so many amazing accelerators out there that can help guide you and that can be that support for you. And they also will invest. So definitely do that research and find that as an opportunity as your way in, because they'll also then open so many doors for you more than you could on your own in terms of cold applications to venture capital groups.
Absolutely. And some folks, you can do multiple. So you can start off with an easy breezy accelerator, maybe a lower level accelerator that sort of gets you warmed up. If you're feeling like, oh my gosh, I'll never get into something like Generator or a Mass Challenge. And then you start building up to the big accelerators. And there's lots of accelerators out there that don't take equity, but they have cash prizes. So, you know, you're doing pitches along the way and you might win some cash in order or in kind services in order to keep bringing your business forward and offsetting the overhead. So I love that. And I love that's how you and Nathan received the nurturing you needed as founders because as I said at the beginning of every show, there's no school for this. It's only when you sit in the seat and start seeing and feeling, and each business is different, by the way, folks, just saying. So as you and Nathan have, when did It's Electric launch?
So we consider ourselves, we're about 14, 15 months old. So we started back in 2022.
Yeah. So as you've grown and figured things out and started to see all the parts and pieces coming together, what has been some of the best mistakes that you've made that informed some really great decisions moving forward?
What are mistakes that we made?
Yeah, it can be something simple, but I have found in story after story, Tia, that some of the things felt at the time a disaster, but then it opened up the founder's eyes and, you know, to, oh, well, we want to do this now. And that was like a game changer for them.
All right. I'm not going to say this is a mistake, but we were asked very early on by a lot of investors that, you know, why isn't our team bigger? You know, that, you know, we need to be a bigger team if we're going to be taken seriously. Now, keep in mind, you know, we just came through what I call weird economic summer, right? You know what I mean? Before, you know, Manchin caved and the IRA was signed, it was this, and maybe we're still in weird economic spring. You know, like, is it a recession? Is it not a recession? Amazon just had another round of layoffs last night, I believe, for 9,000 people. So I come from a background of not only design, but operations, right? So I know how to run a very tight ship. And so the question for Nathan and I was, how do we move as fast as we can by keeping a very low overhead and not deploying capital unnecessarily? And this for us was not, you know, a signal of weakness, but this was a signal of strategy and of strength. And we really leaned into that, even though a lot of investors, you know, stated that they wouldn't invest in us because we're too small of a team. We're just two founders. You know, for us, we're glad that we stuck with our guns, because otherwise, you know, we would be buoying ourselves with a lot of responsibility to employees for a team that we necessarily didn't need. We don't need a full-time engineer. We don't need a full-time designer. We are a pre-seed company. Right. So how do we move that ahead, knowing what we know from our professional experience? So whereas we didn't make the mistake and cave into that pressure, it's something that I can easily see where companies can do so. And I think that, you know, we can trade, you know, a card of size for a card of strength and strategy in regards to how one structures their team when they're so early on.
Absolutely. And the beauty, folks, is that when you're a pre-seed round, you've got a certain amount of cha-ching to hold on to for your runway. And you want to give yourself the longest runway possible, which is why you want to have that lean machine, why you don't want to have overhead, why you might be, you know, living at home or finding other living circumstances that are low overhead while you build your business, whatever it takes. Don't have, you know, go wild with talent acquisition. And especially, Tia, when somebody's come from a larger corporation where they're used to having people, you know, it's so important to say, nope, we can do this ourselves, and that can be a 1099 right there.
It's true. Right? It's true. I fully believe it. Not that we're not excited to grow, excited to build our team, but we're doing so in a very, 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 very intelligent and very planned way. We're not rushing into hiring. Every hire we make is strategic. Every hire we make is well thought out. And even right now, these are the current deliberations that we're having in our founder meetings, as we're discussing what is the critical path, who is our next hire, and really finding that perfect person. And I'll have to say that our first hire, so shout out to Sanjana Parker, who's our pilot and our community manager, you know, she came to us. We didn't even make a job listing. She wrote to us and said, I love what you're doing. I want to move in back into the startup space. She was doing user research at Spotify. So we're so thrilled to have her. And, you know, the way that she came to us was cold call, just complete and total cold outreach. So please, you know, by all means, if you see a company out there that's doing very cool things, reach out to them. You never know what's going to happen. And she became our hire number one, our employee number one.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I'm so happy to hear that story. That is so wonderful. I want to do a quick shout out to the wonderful and oh so queen, Lady Nails. I'm so happy you're here. And thank you for this wonderful feedback. She says, I try to attend every week, such great topics and wonderful guest speakers. Thank you. Thank you. And she said also that a big business starts small. So true. Thanks for swinging by. And Peter, thanks for coming in across the big pond and tuning in from London and Old London Society. So happy that you're here, grabbing the gems from our guest today, Tia Gordon from It's Electric. Tia, what does success look like for you? Because so often as founders, we get really almost shoved down our throats what success should be looking like for us. Quick growth, a quick scale, a quick exit, an IPO. You're not successful unless this has happened or that's happened. And I have a real thing about how a founder should be measuring success for them and be using their own measuring tape. Talk to us about what success looks like for you.
I don't have that big answer for you. My answer is a small one. And my answer is that success for It's Electric looks like, again, validation, where cities say, you know what, we need to find a solution. And It's Electric is synonymous with curbside charging when they start to research that. So we are, you know, beating the drum right now for when any city thinks about curbside charging, they think about It's Electric. We want to be that solution that comes to mind. We are that next generation solution for electric vehicle charging for cities. We are coming at this from design. We are coming at this from community. And this is where we are finding our success, by having cities reach out to us. Nothing thrills us more than when we have inbound inquiry from a new city, because we love cities, and that's what we're here to support. We've been that cities are the heart of It's Electric. They are the heart of what we're doing here. Cities can be sustainable. They can be the most sustainable. It's sort of counterintuitive, but cities can be an incredibly sustainable system for life and for ecosystems, for humanity, and it's what we're really pushing as our message here at It's Electric. So that's our measure of success, is cities that find our solution and that deploy it.
Excellent. And validate what you're working on too. And what's great is that you have your niche, cities. You know, that's just so important that you know exactly what you're going after and why, and the incredible profound effect it's having on our planet. Thank you. I believe so much of the stress that our children are under today is that they look around and they know the planet is in trouble and she needs help. She needs our support. And they're not really trusting the adults and those in charge for taking care of it. So thank you for relieving the stress on that level and finding something, because this is just the beginning for It's Electric, I really believe. When you have felt inadequate as a founder, because this is a new journey, we all have doubts and fears, folks. They come and go. There are founders out there who are on their third, you know, IPO business, and they're still like chomping on their nails and waking up in the middle of the night crying. You know, what helps you, Tia, shift out of doubt, feeling inadequate? What was I thinking? What helps you come back to your purpose and your North Star?
Oh, dear. Yeah, there's a lot of doubt that happens as a founder. As you said earlier in your intro, you know, you have highs and you have lows, and sometimes they're within an hour of each other. So it's a wild ride. But I think that you should not forget who you are and where you've come from, and that everything that you've done has basically built the foundation for this next step. One of my favorite old bosses used to say, you can only coast in one direction. And it's absolutely true. So, you know, being a founder is the opposite of coasting. You are climbing, and you need to have that energy.
So do you like go for a walk? Do you sing music? Do you go to a concert? Like, oh, what do you do to just sort of soothe yourself?
I go for walks. Here we go. I like to jog to retro Whitney Houston. That's my outlet. There we go. So yes, the queen, if you will. Exactly. She is an incredible singer, and her voice is very healing. So I highly recommend, if anyone's stressed out, turn that Whitney Houston way up in your headphones and take a job.
Yay. You have had such a brilliant career before you became a founder. When, you know, someone who knows how to not just do operations, folks, but really lead a product team to its goals. Okay. That is a unique person with incredible skill sets, but now you're an entrepreneur. How has this entrepreneurship journey served you both personally as well as professionally, Tia Gordon?
I think that I would say that it's given me a confidence that I'm not sure was quite there after the pandemic. You know, I think the pandemic was really difficult for a lot of people. To make that the understatement of the year, the pandemic was terrible, especially if you lived in cities like New York, where you know you were seeing basically morgue trucks pop up on your street, where there was ambulances going by every 30 seconds. So the fact that coming out of a global pandemic, that I didn't just sort of retreat and go inside myself, but instead I pushed out further, really, gives me a sense that I am on the right path and that I am headed in the right direction. And also as a founder who's also a parent, I have an elementary school age child. And just the other day when we were walking to school, she was asking me, she wants to start a company that helps endangered animals. And maybe we can brainstorm an idea on what that company could be on the way to school. Oh. So if I was ever doubting that I wasn't rubbing off on her and that this was maybe the wrong choice for a parent to do, in terms of, it does take me away from her more than I would be perhaps at another job or vocation. But it's also, I think, rubbing her the right way. If she's thinking these thoughts at the age of 8, in terms of the fact that she can start a company that can truly make a difference in this world, and she can do that purely from nothing but her ambition, then we're on the right path. And I'll send you, if you want, for the show notes. She's also designed for us an alternate logo, which has cats charging cat electric vehicles.
Brilliant.
It's really for the win. So I can send that to you.
I love that. We would all love that. Oh, Tia, mm-hmm. This has been such a great conversation, inspirational on so many levels, but also you've been a great teacher today for so many founders out there on all aspects of their business map and their founder journey as they are pulling their business ideas together and wanting to take their business to the next level. You've given them such concrete advice. I'm so grateful for that. How may the Startup Life Live community help you and serve you? And what are your final thoughts before I pop you into the green room?
Oh, I would just love for everyone listening that wants It's Electric in their neighborhood. Again, go to itselectric.us, go to get involved, sign up for our wait list today. This is if you're an EV driver, an aspiring driver, a property owner that wants to earn passive income, or a city that wants to bring us into your curbs. Please reach out, get involved and sign up for our wait list today. It'll help us in such a huge way. Thank you so much.
Okay, folks, again, a mwah, mwah, a double chef's kiss for incredible media preparedness from our founder today. And a few comments from the crowd. Yay, Tia, thank you. And a great t-shirt, cats charging their cats EVs. Yes, absolutely. Tia, thank you so much for joining us and enlightening our lives with this wonderful conversation about your phenomenal business, It's Electric. Please give our best to Nathan and your first employee and all your great advisors and investors. We're cheering wildly for you.
Thank you so much, Andy. This was so much fun, and I loved being on the show. I really appreciate this. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, and hang around so I can give you a big hug. And Patrick Carew, you bet. Thank you, Tia and Andy. Oh, thank you for tuning in, Patrick. All right, here we go. We're going to wrap up the show now. I got to tell you, I am so inspired. Having a founder like Tia on the show really helps us get to the next level with our businesses. And, you know, we were talking about funding, right? Well, our next guest, she's in the U.S. for a brief period of time, so I'm having her on the show because she's from Sydney, Australia. It's Melissa Widner from Lighter Capital, and we're chatting with Melissa because Lighter Capital is the pioneer and leader in revenue-based financing for tech startups, founders, and companies. And prior to Lighter Capital, Melissa was the managing director of NAB Ventures, the VC arm of the National Australia Bank, and a general partner at Seattle-based Seapoint Ventures. And she's a seasoned founder. She has firsthand experience building the business from the ground up. She was the founder and CEO of Seven Software, a Silicon Valley-based enterprise software company acquired by Concor. So she's got all sorts of goodies to share with us. And that is on Tuesday, March 28 at 12 p.m., I'm going to be heading down to New York City for Thursday and Friday. So there's no show on this Friday, the 24th. I'm going to go see our baby boy. He's 6'3" and a grown-ass guy, but we still call him our baby boy in New York City. So I'll be back on March 28 at 12 p.m. EST. And how do you know whenever I post a new show? That's right. You are a member of the Startup Life Live meetup group. Hop on over there. Links are in the show notes. It's Startup Life Live, and it's at the wonderful platform of meetup group. Until next time, everybody, remember, you are braver than you seem, stronger than you think. That's right. And smarter, as we say here in Boston, wicked smarter than you've ever seen before. So I'm so excited for all that you are building. Please connect with me online. Let me know how you're doing. I'd love to hear your stories. And I'll see you next time. Wishing you a delicious day everywhere you glow. Bye, everyone.